George Harrison passed away 17 years ago, and February the 25th marks his 75th birthday. He was the quiet Beatle and was considered the most spiritual, but how much do we really know? Susan Shumsky has firsthand knowledge of many of the behind-the-scenes going-ons and doings. She's a highly respected spiritual teacher, founder of Divine Revelations, and is an award-winning best-selling author who loved and studied with the Maharishi, and she joins us now to talk about her experiences and her book, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. And Susan, we welcome you to the program.
I'm so happy to be here with you today, Mark.
Well, I'm pleased to have you on the program. And, of course, talking about the Beatles is something that I delight in doing as well. Also, we're talking about the Beatles' experience and a bunch of the behind-the-scenes with the Maharishi. But I understand that you lived and studied with the Maharishi for 22 years, and it took you from India to the Swiss Alps to Iowa. And I would say, what a journey in so many ways.
That's very true. Yeah, I was with him for 22 years, and I was on his personal staff for six of those years. So I have a kind of an insider's perspective on Maharishi.
Now, I understand that you started out in India, and how old were you when all your adventure began?
I began transcendental meditation at age 19, and I traveled to India to study with Maharishi at age 21.
And I understand that being on the staff, you had referred to it as both heaven and hell. So your experiences was a little mixture of positive and negatives?
I wouldn't say it was positive and negative. It was all positive. But I went through heaven and hell on a daily basis. It was very intense to be around Maharishi. It was something very unusual. It was a very unusual experience because it's traditional in India that when a disciple goes to stay with a guru, that there's an unspoken agreement that the guru is going to transform the disciple. And Maharishi used to say it was like I was, the disciple is a piece of wood and he's a carpenter. So what he's doing is he's making improvements on that piece of wood. And of course, when improvements are being made or you're changing or transforming very quickly, it can be very uncomfortable because what he was doing was helping us to spiritually awaken. And that takes us out of our comfort zone. So it was a combination of heaven and hell daily. And it was like I call it an open ego surgery.
I understand that completely. Give us a little insight into who he was as a person, and also tell us what exactly is transcendental meditation.
Transcendental meditation is a very simple meditation technique that I think anyone can do. Maharishi always used to say that if you can think a thought, you can practice TM. So it's just a simple method where you close your eyes, sit down, close your eyes, and then you use something called a mantra, which is a sound or a word, and you think the sound on the surface level of the mind, and then you sort of let the sound go, and you continue to think the sound, but then you sort of allow it to just become very faint and quiet, and that brings you into a deep state of relaxation and peace and what they call transcendental awareness. In India, they call that samadhi, which means evenness of mind and stillness of body. So it's very good for the mind and for the body because you get deep relaxation and deep inner peace and contentment, and also an expansion of consciousness. You experience this unbounded awareness. It's a very powerful method.
Go ahead.
You want me to also say what was something yes. about Maharishi?
Yes, he is a person.
Yeah, I mean, before Maharishi arrived in America in 1959, there was no meditation, there was no mantra, there was no yoga. These things just didn't exist. It was a different world back then. And there were not yoga studios on every corner and martial arts everywhere. Mm-hmm. They didn't know anything about the wisdom of the East. And Maharishi really single-handedly made these into household words and brought this wisdom into the West. And so we were a witness to that, and we participated in that. And he was an extraordinary person, very focused, very charismatic. And being in his presence, there was a lot of joy, a lot of happiness. He was the happiest person I've ever met. And he had an incredibly powerful aura, a charismatic auric field, and he was he's quite extraordinary.
How did the Beatles come to find out about TM and Maharishi?
It was Patty Boyd, who was George Harrison's wife. She saw a little ad in the Times of London advertising transcendental meditation. She went to the lecture. It was in February of 1967 that she learned transcendental meditation along with a good friend of hers. And then she told her husband about it, and immediately he said, well, I want my mantra. I want my own mantra. And so when they found out that Maharishi was going to be at the London Hilton in August 24th of 1967, George Harrison got tickets for all the Beatles and their wives, and they showed up at the lecture, and so did Alexis Mardis, who was a kind of hanger-oner of the Beatles, and also Paul McCartney's brother, McGeer. He came also, and they ended up going with Maharishi on a train to North Wales the next day, August 25th, 1967. And that's where Maharishi was teaching a meditation retreat. They took the retreat. They were going to stay there for 10 days. Unfortunately, while they were there on the 27th of August, Brian Epstein suddenly died of an overdose, and they had to return to London. But they were very keen on meditation, and they continued to promote it in all their media interviews, for example, Robert Frost and so on. So they were really gung-ho on TM, as many people were at the time, because it really worked, and people had great experiences with it.
Now, when the Beatles were first starting out, they were known for their dress in all black and their mop-top haircuts. Is the exposure and the influence of the Maharishi when they added color and they went from doo-wop music to psychedelic music?
Actually, the psychedelic thing with the Beatles began before they met Maharishi, because they were part of that hippie revolution that we were part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a flower child. They were flower children at the same time, you know, extended over the ocean, not just America.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hippie revolution, but in England, England was a big part of the hippie revolution. So, yeah, we were all dressing crazy and taking psychedelics. And our gurus were Timothy Leary,
mm-hmm,
and Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass. And they wrote a book called The Psychedelic Experience. And they introduced us to LSD and told us that we could experience higher states of consciousness and experience nirvana through drugs, through LSD. And they told us, turn on, tune in, drop out. And in fact, Tomorrow Never Knows, written by John Lennon, is about that very subject. In fact, it has a quotation from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is what those two gurus, Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, told us about. And so, yes, they were part of the same hippie revolution that was going on here. And in fact, George Harrison came to the Summer of Love in August of 1967. He came to Haight-Ashbury to check it out and see what was going on over here. He was disillusioned, though, by visiting Haight-Ashbury. He just saw it was a bunch of dirty, what he considered to be dirty hippies, and he just didn't like it very much.
All right. Well, now, back to when the Beatles were in India, I understand that they left in a huff. What was the trigger response there?
Yes, Maharishi invited the Beatles to go to India, and they did show up in February of 1968. Ringo stayed for only a couple of weeks. Paul stayed for 1 month. George and John stayed for 2 months, and George and John left along with their wives and other people in their entourage. They left in a huff. Now, why they left is a very big mystery. However, there were three reasons why they left. One had to do with a film deal that went wrong, where Maharishi gave exclusive rights to the Beatles to do a film of Maharishi and a transcendental meditation. He gave that right to AppleCorp, but unfortunately he had promised the same thing to someone else, who was the leader of his organization in the States, Charlie Lutz. And Charlie had made a contract with Four Star Productions of Hollywood. And in fact, Charlie showed up in India when the Beatles were there with a signed contract that gave exclusive rights for Four Star Productions to film Maharishi for the next 5 years. Hmm. So that was a little bit of a conflict of interest. And at the same time, the Beatles had asked Neil Aspinall to put a film crew together and come back to India with the film crew at the same time. So the film crew, the Four Star film crew, arrived in India first, and that was not the Beatles company. That was the other deal. So they showed up with their crew, and John Lennon woke up, opened the door to his bungalow. He's bedheaded and bleary-eyed first thing in the morning, and he opens his door, standing at the threshold, and there's a cameraman and a director yelling, "Action!" Well, John Lennon and George got very angry, and they realized they then realized that Maharishi had been using them for publicity all along, and so they refused to leave their rooms. The cameras and the lights were set up in the lecture hall, and they didn't go there. They stayed in their little bungalow. So that was one problem. Another problem had to do with Alexis Mardis, who was a kind of Beatles hanger-oner. In fact, Cynthia Lennon said that the man made her skin crawl, quote-unquote, and she was concerned about his Svengali-like effect upon her husband, John Lennon. So John had introduced Alexis Mardis to the other Beatles as, quote-unquote, my new guru, Alex. And Alexis wanted to drill the skulls of the Beatles, something called trepanation, drilling the skulls in order to open the third eye. And he had other ideas about what he was going to do with the Beatles and controlling the Beatles in certain different ways, and also claimed to be this great inventor of very strange things, like paint that had a speaker in it, for sound mm-hmm. amplification, mm-hmm. and a force field that would make you invisible, and flying saucer, all kinds of crazy things. Mm-hmm. And he promised Maharishi that he would make an invention that would broadcast Maharishi's message throughout the world and also bring electricity to the entire area there in the Himalayas. It was just nuts. So Alexis and a woman there named Rosalind were having an affair at the ashram. They were having sex at the ashram. And that woman at some point claimed that Maharishi had made a pass at her. And that Alexis told the Beatles and spread the rumor. He and Rosalind both spread the rumor around the ashram that Maharishi had made a pass at her. And Alexis, actually, his hidden agenda, his reason for going to India, his only reason for being there, was to split up the Beatles from Maharishi. And he told Charlie Lutz that, as a matter of fact. He didn't hide it. He told Charlie Lutz, "I came here to get the Beatles away from Maharishi." Hmm. So they spread this rumor, and then John Lennon caught wind of it, and he was upset about it, and he already upset about the film deal, and they debated all night. Alexis said they had to leave immediately because Maharishi would put a spell on them, that it was black magic, he was a black magician, and all this crazy stuff. So by the time morning came, John Lennon and George showed up at Maharishi's bungalow, where Alan Waite and Paul Horn, Alan Waite was the director of the Four Star film, and Paul Horn was also involved with the film, and he he was a famous flutist, and they were at Maharishi's bungalow, and John and George showed up, and Alan said that the Beatles asked to see Maharishi. Maharishi came out and took the two Beatles into his private room, into his bedroom, and 20 minutes later, Alan Waite reported, 20 minutes later, George and John came out of the room and said they are leaving. So no one actually really knows what went on in that room except for John and George and Maharishi. But John Lennon reports and George reports that they told Maharishi they were leaving, and Maharishi said, why? And they said, well, you know why. And Maharishi said, no, I don't know why. You must tell me. And John Lennon said, well, if you're so bloody cosmic, you'll know why. And then John reported that Maharishi shot him a very dirty look, and John Lennon, naive that he was, thought that if Maharishi was so cosmic that he would know why they were leaving. So in any case, they decided to leave. They were very angry, and Alexis very quickly got the taxis before anybody changed their mind, and they left. And but that's not the end of the story, actually. What happened was, in 1991, George Harrison contacted Deepak Chopra. Deepak Chopra was very, very close to Maharishi. In fact, Maharishi made Deepak's career for him. He launched him to stardom through his organization, which made Deepak into best-selling author. And Deepak was very, very close to Maharishi. He was actually Maharishi's representative who traveled all over the world promoting transcendental meditation. A lot of people don't know that about Deepak, but in any case, that's how Deepak got started in his career. So George Harrison wanted to set up a meeting with Maharishi, and Deepak said, yeah, great. So he set it up, and George and Deepak flew to Holland, where Maharishi was living at that time. At the end of his life, he was living in Holland. And in 1991, they met, and when George went into the meeting, he gave Maharishi a rose, and Maharishi just smiled and beamed, as he always does, and George was sitting there, and nothing was said. And then after a while, George said, I came to apologize. And Maharishi said, for what? And George said, you know why. And Maharishi said, tell Deepak the story, the real story. So George proceeded to tell Deepak that while they were in India, some people in their party were taking drugs, drinking alcohol, and that Maharishi became very upset with him because he was angry that they were doing that in the ashram, which was not allowed. And Maharishi asked the people in their party to leave the ashram. And so they left, and they did. They left in a huff because they were angry that Maharishi had told them to leave. So then Maharishi would not come out in public to say that this was the reason why the Beatles left. And the Beatles made a pact that they would never tell anyone why they left India. So that was, if you can believe Deepak Chopra, who reported this to the Times of London, that was the story.
Now, I understand that the Maharishi made a shocking prediction about the Beatles that came true. What was that prediction?
When Maharishi was in India with the Beatles, he told the Beatles that if they did not continue meditating, their band would break up.
Okay.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay. And now I'm looking here, and I like the song Dear Prudence. It's a pretty song to me, but I don't understand the purpose or the motivation behind it. I understand there's a few songs that have some meanings behind it. What is the connection with Dear Prudence, and is it Mia Farrow?
Yeah, okay. So Mia Farrow, who was a very famous actress at the time, starred in Rosemary's Baby, probably that was her most famous film, and starred in many other films, Woody Allen films, because she was married to Woody Allen, starred in several of his films. So Mia Farrow and her sister Prudence Farrow traveled to India with Maharishi, and they were on the same course as the Beatles. So Prudence and Mia were there at the same time the Beatles were. And Prudence was a very keen meditator. She really wanted to get very deep into the experience and the knowledge of transcendental meditation. She had learned transcendental meditation in 1965, 2 years previous to when she went, or 3 years previous to when she went to India. And her sister learned transcendental meditation on the way to India. I mean, actually, when they arrived in India at the hotel in Bombay, in fact, is where Mia Farrow learned TM from Maharishi. So Mia Farrow was a new meditator, and Prudence had been doing it for 3 years. So Prudence was really gung-ho. She was like me, actually. I was gung-ho, too. I was very obsessed with meditation, and so was she. And she used to spend all her time on that course in India inside her room meditating with her eyes closed. And sometimes she wouldn't even touch the food that was left at the door when she was in deep silence and wouldn't come out. And people started to get concerned about her. And people asked John Lennon, who was very nearby where she was staying, they asked him to sort of look out for her and see if she was okay and so on. And in fact, it was this experience of Prudence that made John Lennon write this song, Dear Prudence, which says, Dear Prudence, won't you come out to play? Greet the brand new day. The sun is up. The sky is blue. It's beautiful. And so are you. You know, the birds are singing, sunny skies, open your eyes, and so on. So that song was directed towards Prudence to try to convince her to come out. And in fact, John and George burst into her room a couple times during the course. She does not remember them singing Dear Prudence, but she did remember them singing Sergeant Pepper and also Obladiya Oblada. But she didn't like it. She was happy. She thought it was sweet that they were concerned about her, but she just wanted them to go away and leave her alone.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that George Harrison and Eric Clapton were real good, if not best friends. And I've got to ask you, certainly George's wife, Patty Boyd, and Eric Clapton's relentless pursuit of his best friend's wife. And I gotta ask how, what you know in regards to how George Harrison dealt with that and how he felt about that.
Well, I don't know how he felt personally about it, obviously, inwardly, but he did. He was actually strangely compliant about letting her go. It was just, okay.
Wow.
You know, we could share or whatever.
Wow.
He just didn't seem to be that upset about it from everything I've read.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And yet she came back to him, so... Yeah, and I recently watched a documentary on Life in 12 Bars about Clapton. I knew that, you know, I knew that certainly there was that romance and everything. I just didn't realize how relentless really his effort was, and it was pointed out in that documentary. That was pretty amazing. What was special about George's 25th birthday?
Well, yeah, in fact, his 25th birthday was February 25th of 1968. 50 years ago, exactly 50 years ago, you know. So on that date, Maharishi always used to make a big thing about people's birthdays. It was always, you know, he always did like a, what they call a puja ceremony for people's birthdays, which is a traditional ceremony in India that had to do with making offerings to Maharishi's guru, whom he called Gurudev. And also, there was a big celebration for George Harrison on that day. And they managed to, the kitchen managed to make a sheet cake for him, and there were candles, and all the course participants had marigold garlands that they buried George in. There's a photo of that in my book, Maharishi and Me. In fact, my book has over 100 photos in it, really great photos. And one of them is a picture of George Harrison being buried in these garlands. So he's like, looks like he's very uncomfortable and his heavy garlands around his neck. He's got all these. And that was part of the celebration. And then also Maharishi gave George Harrison a present, and the present was a globe. The globe, however, had South America on the top and North America on the bottom of the globe. And Maharishi said to George, you see this globe, it's upside down. The world is in turmoil. And I would like for you to make it right. And so he handed it to George, and George turned it upside down so that North America was on the top and South America was on the bottom. And George declared, there, I've done it.
Now, did you say that he had sheet cake for his birthday?
A big giant birthday cake to serve to all the everybody that was there. There were over 60 people. There's about 60 to 70 people on the course.
Well, if it's the sheet cake that, you know, that is cocoa and pecan chocolate, all that together, that is the cake of choice our entire family chooses for their birthday cake. So I picked up on that. So now, do you still practice, TM?
No, I do not. Actually, I was in that organization for 22 years, and I was a TM teacher, and I still do recommend TM to people. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful meditation practice. But I happen to practice another technique, something that I teach, actually. It's called divine revelation.
So after 22 years, was there any particular moment or instance that that caused you to leave the organization, or why did you leave?
Well, I was living in Fairfield, Iowa at the time, which is where Maharishi International University was, and now it's called, still there, obviously, it's called Maharishi University of Management. They just changed the name of the school. But I was living there, along with all the other TM practitioners who lived there and continue to live there, in fact. And I loved TM. I never, ever had anything but wonderful, wonderful experiences of TM. But I started learning this other thing, which really surprised me, actually, that I learned something else, because I was very, very arrogant about TM being the only way and the only way to enlightenment and all that kind of thing that the TM organization seems to promote and teach. But I learned something else that was really very helpful to me. And I started a little prayer group while I was in living there in Fairfield. And then I started teaching outside of Fairfield, traveling around and teaching. And so I ended up leaving. One main reason I left is because I couldn't afford the mortgage on the house, and I couldn't find anyone to rent it. And so I left Fairfield, and but I still loved Transcendental Meditation, and I still love Maharishi.
Susan Shumsky is who we're talking with. I would love to talk to you another hour, but my show is only an hour, so I am going to give you an opportunity to mention where to find your book and any websites that you might want to offer up. But I do want to ask you, is there anything else that you do want to make sure that you do mention while we're talking today, or anything else that you'd like to say?
The fact is that Maharishi really had a huge effect on our culture, on Western civilization, and people don't really even know who he is. And even though Transcendental Meditation is enjoying a resurgence right now through the David Lynch Foundation, people really don't know about Maharishi, and he isn't really mentioned by people. So, I wrote this book so that people could get a glimpse into what it's like to be a disciple of a spiritual master from India. And it's a very emotional book, and I think people will really get a eye-opening kind of, it's pretty shocking throughout the book. You'll be surprised at what you're going to find out about what it's like to be with a spiritual master, and it isn't anything like what you thought. This book definitely challenges your beliefs about what a spiritual master is, what enlightenment is, what it's like to live in an ashram, that kind of thing. So I think you'll enjoy the book, and it's called Maharishi and Me. And my website is drsusan.org. Drsusan.org is my website. And you can purchase Maharishi and Me anywhere. I recommend Amazon because it usually has the least expensive prices, but you can get it at Walmart, Target. You can get it at bookstores and all those online places that I just mentioned, and Barnes & Noble also online and in bookstores. So the book is available anywhere right now, and I hope you enjoy it, Maharishi and me.
A fascinating read for certain. And Susan, this has been a really interesting conversation to have with you. I will look for future opportunities so we can continue some dialogue here, but I appreciate you being with us today.
Wonderful. I would look forward to speaking to you again. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being with us today.
All right. Bye for now.